Slide 27. So let's go through some of these basic idioms and see how we classify them according to the types of criteria we've been talking about to date. Next slide. The scatterplot. Scatterplot is two values. So the axes encode the values and it emphasizes how two values relate to each other. You can handle hundreds of point marks. We can add a second key using color or texture for the category. And we can actually add additional value using size. So what's scatterplot good for? Scatterplots are excellent for showing relation and distribution, and they can support some composition by being able to find single values. But the important thing to know about scatter plots is they express the relationship of two continuous values. Next slide. Sometimes these relationships aren't really clear, so we can use data transformations to enhance the clarity and show patterns. Here I've changed the axis scale using a logarithmic transformation, and now what I can see is a strong correlation between the two sets of values without losing my outlier. We'll see examples of this in some of our exercises as we go through the course. Next slide. But why not use a scatter plot for everything? Scatter plots are excellent for distribution queries, and they let us see all the data. However, they can be difficult to understand. And the important thing to know is that they can only model relations between two quantitative variables. And if you have too much data, as we've seen, you will see occlusion. So what else have we got? Next slide. Well, if what we want to see is more related to comparison and composition, we're better off to use something like a bar chart, which allows us to have a categorical key and a quantitative value. So we use height or length to encode the quantitative value, and then we list or align the keys along the other axis. So these can be both nominal keys or they could be ordinal keys if the data are ordered. And the thing about a bar chart is that it emphasizes individual values and it emphasizes relative differences. So it supports comparison. It supports composition because we can see how the data are sort of put together. And if we want to look at distribution, we can use the histogram to show distribution, the one key or one attribute histogram. Next slide. So the bar chart is probably the most common visualization that we use. Now it's good. Its categorical attributes match well with spatial regions. We separate them, we can order them, and we align them. However, it's hard to find patterns in the overall data shape. So again, we can't necessarily see what the overall data look like because it's emphasizing the individual values. It can handle dozens to maybe 100 items. When you get too many bars, they sort of glom into a single few spatial region. So it's usually used with aggregates and not with the value of the individual data item, such as sums or medians or means. Next slide. Now, even though we're not supposedly able to see trends and things like that with bar graphs, Stephen Few has shown examples of how you can use a paired bar graph, that is bars deviating from a central axis, and put trend lines on them. So there are ways that we can combine bar graph with other visualizations to increase the perception of relations and trends in them. Next slide. And here's an example of what he calls his correlation bar graph. This is actually a form of what we call a bullet graph, in which we display one value with another or within another to give context. If you look carefully at this visualization, you'll see it's actually two bar charts overlaid on each other. One on the left has the height in inches, and the other on the right has the average yearly income in dollars. And so what we're trying to do is see how these two sorted values, sorted on the salary in US dollars, how these correlate with each other. So because these are two sets of values, we have to have two concurrent value axes. This can take a while to interpret, and it can easily become confusing. So it's a dense way of showing the data, but you have to be very careful that the relationship of the bar to its appropriate axis is maintained. Next slide. Another thing that's very common to do with bar charts is to stack them. And that's a bar chart that has two keys and attributes and one value, and they are built into stacked components. So what we see here is a stacked bar chart where I can see the part-whole relationship level of detail. And the way we fix these is we get the most important key, the most important attribute, remember the hierarchy of information, gets the axis alignment, because that's how I judge the different heights, right? And the second key gets the non-alignment. So this really supports composition. It really lets me see how the data in each large key break out. But it's very good for comparison, again, of the first order of the first key aligned along the axis. But it's a little bit hard to calculate and compare the subcategorical values, because it's very hard for me, for example, to compare the relative values of the blues because they're not aligned on a common axis. I have to kind of use a size comparison and see. I can see large differences, but I can't see small individual differences very well. Next slide. A third thing we can do with stack bars is to group them. So now what I'm doing is I'm basically taking three keys, three categorical keys. Again, I have the main axis alignment for the first key, the color of the component in each stacked bar for the second key, and then I use this spatial grouping or alignment for the third key. So I kind of group these into composite stacked bars, right? That makes these into what we call glyphs. And a glyph is a composite object that is built up from multiple marks. Again, we can see that this is a way of being able to show more categories in the stacked bar more easily. I can see the individual components more easily. It's a little bit hard, though, to see how these eight different values combine to a single overall value, because now I've actually got them side by side as well as top to bottom. So all of these depend on how many keys you want to show, right? And as you keep adding more, you support composition and you support part whole better, and you start to lose some of the clarity about being able to extract the individual values and accurately compare them. Next slide. Something slightly similar to a stacked bar is a dot plot. Uses a dot alignment along an axis for the value, and then on the other axis it uses a nominal key to sort the lines of dots. So it's rather like a bar chart. The difference is that we show all the dots, that we show all of the elements of the data, and you can use a second nominal key to show where the dots fall, where the different categories fall within these categories. So it shows the detail of the points. It allows composition, it also allows comparison. I can look at my iris data here and see that I really only have one data point for this particular kind of iris, whereas I seem to have a lot of data cases for the other. I've also added here a third key, which is size, for the actual width value. So we can, without too much, within a very small range, because we get occlusion, actually use the dot plot to encode information similar to a bar chart, but allow us to see more detail about the points. So it supports both composition and comparison. Next slide. Finally, think about the box plot. In the box plot, as you know, we have one value as position, which is the length of the box. And then if we want to add multiple boxes, we can actually use a categorical key as list alignment along the axis. So that gives us multiple boxes aligned along the categorical axis, similar to a bar chart. We can also use another key as color to add a second key. So this shows us the spread of all the data. And we can have infinite values in that it's showing us where the values sit, but it's not showing us the individual item. So the key thing about a box plot, if you want to understand the range of your data, is that it can handle sort of an enormous amount of data, because it's not showing you the individual points. It's just showing you the range of the values of the individual points. It can only handle probably up to a couple of dozen boxes for the categorical key, very similar to the bar chart. What's the key value of a box plot? It lets you compare distributions. So not only does it support the distribution task, but it lets you compare distributions, and that's really important. However, box plots can be very difficult to understand, and they need to be learned. Next slide. Now, the next very common form of visualization is a line chart. It uses position to express value according to some key along the other axis. And the emergent effect of the line chart is that we see the angle and the shape of the line to show trends. So there's a very strong perceptual difference in the shape of the line that helps us see peaks and valleys. So we almost always use these for things like time. What's the important thing about a line chart? Next slide. The key, the axis key against which you plot your value, must be ordered. And it must be interval. In other words, the distances between them must be the same, and it must be ordered and sorted. The emergence of the value of a line chart that gets resorted, where you somehow change the order of the things in the middle, completely destroys the value of the chart. So a dot chart is like a line chart, but it doesn't have a line between the dots. The more common form is a line chart. It's very good for ordered data. It can support hundreds of points. It's really good for finding trends, so understanding that in composition, what's the actual makeup of the data. It's also good for comparison at points in the line, less good for actually plotting an individual value if your line is continuous, a little bit better if you are using just the unconnected dots. But this is the key thing that we use for ordered data and to show trends. Next slide. We can also add multiple lines. We can use color to add a second key, which is a very common form. And we can actually even add a second set of values if what we want to do, very similar to the bullet graph that we saw before, is add an additional axis. Now, what we've done here is superimpose another set of lines on the first axis. Multiple axes are very powerful. They can be overused very fast, right? Because it's very difficult to know what line associates with what axis. But if you want to, for example, show the range of two values of a common data item, this is a very good way to do it. Next slide. A variant of a line chart is an area chart. And here we have an area chart. An area chart is just like a line chart, but the region underneath it is filled. So we're using filled spatial region. And a very common use of area charts is a stacked area chart. So very much like a stacked bar chart, this allows us to basically stack these regions on top of each other. Suffers the same problems as the stacked bar chart. We're really good at assessing the alignment along the axis, so we can look and see the different values and find the values for each of the individuals, but it's very hard to determine what the value of the unaligned axis is. So here, for example, oranges is 8, but because it's on top of, let's see what the blue is, apples, this is an additive, right? So I have to understand that this region is not a value of 20, this value, but it's actually a value of this minus this. Takes a little bit of time to do. While these are quite common, a more preferable version is the next slide version. The next slide version in which we overlay, next slide, slide 44, in which we overlay the area charts using transparency. This gives us the same benefit of the stacked area chart, but instead it aligns everything because it overlays them along a common axis. Let's go back to slide 43 for a moment. So previous slide, more formally, we use a value of length. We use an attribute of length to show the value. We order the first key along the axis, the spatial region, and then we can add two or more categorical using the color key. So we can do sort of along the ordered axis, dozens to hundreds of values. Remember, this is like a line chart, so we're looking at the shape more than the value of the individual item. We don't have a lot of room in how many we can stack up, maybe several. This again is really good for showing part whole when we're looking at trends, finding the individual value. Very poor at being able to sort of compare various values. It's not good for comparison. All right, slide 45. Here's another variant of the line chart, which is not aligned along a common value axis. This is basically a stacked time series. So we have two nominal keys, two categorical keys, and one value. We put dozens or hundreds of items along the main axis. So this main axis, items are aligned along an ordered axis. This is typically ordered, but there is no starting zero for the y-axis, right? For each of our stacked glyph levels, we are just looking at what the cumulative value may be, right? So we only get a few of those. So this is really good in composition, finding trends, finding a value, and seeing the part whole. So we could see, from if this is listening from last.fm, we can see, for example, at this stage, at the early stage, there's a lot of listening of different types going on, and we can see what that distribution is. So this de-emphasizes individual values. It's almost impossible to find the individual value, and it emphasizes the part-whole relationship and the cumulative, but allows us to see how the trends differ over time as well. These are called stream graphs. Next slide. So, in summary, bar charts, line charts, dot plots, stream graphs, and all of these all encode a quantitative value against the key attribute in a rectilinear layout, and they use additional encoding for the other keys. In addition, lines and area charts use connection marks and filled regions to show inter-item relations. Really important, you can only use these for ordered data. Next slide. What do we use when? Well, bars, dots, and bubbles emphasize the comparison and association of individual values. Lines emphasize trends. Now, here's some examples from a very famous study that was done in Stanford University a number of years ago. Next slide. Barbara Tversky and Jay Zakas asked people, giving them a couple of visualizations, what their interpretation of the visualization were. Now, the data were height of children between 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds, also divided by gender. Now, lines imply connections, and sure enough, they found when they showed people the lines on the x-axis, they got judgments like the more male somebody is, the taller he is, and the 12-year-olds are taller than the 10-year-olds. Well, of course, it makes perfect sense to say the 12-year-olds are taller than 10-year-olds, not the more male someone is, the taller he is. So what should we do in that case? Next slide. Well, we should enable comparison between the categories using a bar. Males are an average taller than females.